This episode features discussion of violence that some people may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
It was 8:30 p.m. on April 4th, 1991. Inside the Good Guys electronics store in Sacramento, California, a group of customers and staff sat strung together with electrical cords.
They had been taken hostage by four Vietnamese gunmen roughly 7 hours prior. Now, one of their captors, 17-year-old Long Cad Nguyen, paced around angrily.
The cops had refused to give in to the elaborate demands of Long and his co-conspirators, and as every hour ticked by, he was becoming more and more angry.
Long also knew that his favorite Sacramento gang, the Oriental Boys, was bound to be watching the standoff on TV. He needed them to see that he, his two brothers, and his best friend were serious, tough guys.
And what better way to show the police and the Oriental Boys how tough they were than to shoot one of the captives?
A smile played at the corners of Long's mouth as he reached into his pocket and pulled out a coin.
He announced to the terrified captives that they were going to play heads or tails to decide their fate.
Long flipped the coin into the air. Tails.
This is Hostage, a Parcast original. Every week, we tell the stories behind the most captivating hostage situations and the people inside them.
We'll also cover the psychological tactics used in kidnapping situations and what the human brain does when held captive.
I'm Irma Blanco.
And I'm Carter Roy.
You can find episodes of Hostage and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Hostage for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Hostage in the search bar.
At Parcast, we are grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
This is our final episode on the largest hostage rescue event in U.S. history. On April 4th, 1991, 21-year-old Loi Nguyen, his teenage brothers Pham and Long, and their friend Quang Tran held over 40 employees and customers hostage at an electronics store in Sacramento, California.
Last week, we met the Nguyen brothers and their friend Quang. We followed their frustrations as Vietnamese immigrants in America, driving them to commit a high-profile crime. We also explored the first few moments of the hostage crisis when the four young men charged into Good Guys.
This week, we'll delve into the police standoff as the gunmen give a laundry list of demands in exchange for their hostages. We'll follow the captors as they become increasingly erratic and learn about their final showdown with authorities. It was almost 2 p.m. on April 4th, 1991. Inside Sacramento's Good Guys electronics store, dozens of customers and staff of all ages were huddled together, fearing for their lives. Just a half hour before, four gunmen had stormed the store and taken everyone inside hostage.
The young Vietnamese men were seeking media attention and wanted to prove themselves worthy of joining a local street gang called the Oriental Boys. They also hoped to draw enough government attention to negotiate a safe passage back to Vietnam, a place they wished their families had never left.
The oldest, 21-year-old Loi Cac Nguyen, was an unemployed high school dropout who had become angry over the lack of job opportunities in America. His younger brother, 19-year-old Pham Cad Nguyen, was a follower who, like his older brother, wanted to return to Vietnam and fight the communist government. Their youngest brother, 17-year-old Long Cad Nguyen, and his best friend, 17-year-old Quang Tran, felt the same way, and they were eager to prove they were tough guys, the kind they'd seen in their favorite Hong Kong action movies.
Within the first few minutes of the siege, a good guy's employee had called 911 and alerted the authorities. Since then, the kidnappers had received a call from Sergeant Jerry Gomez at the Sacramento Sheriff's Department.
The oldest gunman, 21-year-old Loy Ca Nguyen, had answered. He told Gomez that his name was Tai and said that he was the one in charge. He also indicated that he and his three comrades were affiliated with the Oriental Boys.
Then Loy issued an elaborate list of demands. $3 million in cash, a 1,000-year-old ginseng plant to make tea with, and a military helicopter to transport them to Thailand.
Loy likely asked for passage to Thailand because he thought it would provide an easy route to Vietnam, the place that he and his brothers were born. By asking to go to Thailand instead of Vietnam, they probably hoped to avoid being tracked down later.
Meanwhile, the Sacramento Sheriff's Department swarmed the good guy's parking lot. County Sheriff Glenn Craig was present at the scene to oversee the events from a makeshift command center.
Sheriff Craig squinted at the store's windows. He could just make out two of the gunmen standing behind a line of terrified hostages. This human shield would make it impossible for a sniper to target the hostage takers inside.
The Critical Incident Negotiations Team, CINT, arrived a short time later. At this time, the state and local law enforcement agencies were in agreement. Sergeant Gomez, at the downtown office, would remain the first point of contact with captors and would continue negotiations over the phone while the other authorities listened in.
News vans were also arriving near the scene. They set up their cameras and zoomed in on the store's glass windows. The unfolding story was going to be broadcast live to the nation, just like the kidnappers wanted.
When the Special Enforcement Detail, SED, truck arrived at 2:40 p.m., they drove into the rear of the parking lot, out of sight of the store. Several TV crews tried to rush towards them, but Sheriff Craig managed to intercept. He firmly instructed the cameramen not to film the SED team. It was imperative that the tactics used by the entry team were not broadcast live, given that the gunmen would be watching from the televisions inside the store.
Next, the SED team deployed two snipers. One crouched on a roof opposite the store, while a second sniper, Jeff Boys, crawled beneath an SUV in the parking lot. His position gave an excellent view of the good guy's front door.
In the meantime, the SED team leader, Sergeant Don Devlin, obtained a floor plan of the building. He learned that good guys had only two entrances, a front door and a back door. He reasoned that a frontal attack would be too high risk, so the freight entrance at the rear of the store would have to be their point of entry.
The seven-man entry team would be composed of Sergeant Devlin and six highly trained SED investigators. But first, Devlin needed to gain tactical information.
The fabric store on the north side of the building shared a hallway with the electronics store. If Devlin could thread a camera through the hall ceiling and into the crawl space above good guys, they might be able to learn the exact positions of the hostages and their captors.
Meanwhile, Sergeant Gomez continued to talk to Loy, who wasn't finished making his demands.
Loy told Sergeant Gomez that he also wanted to talk with President George H.W. Bush. Furthermore, he asked to receive a signed document from California's governor, Pete Wilson, granting him and his comrades amnesty.
Sergeant Gomez replied that the president was a busy man, but that he was willing to negotiate. He knew it was crucial to keep Loy on the phone so that he could understand what was happening inside.
Author and kidnapping expert Brian John Hurd says, "The kidnappers' behavior during the first few days is likely to be unpredictable, as they may well be confused over their ultimate objectives, whom they should contact regarding a ransom demand, and how much they should demand."
This seemed to be the case with the good guys' gunmen, who didn't have a clear plan from the start. While their ultimate goal was to go back to Vietnam, they were also infatuated with Sacramento's notorious Oriental Boys gang. Throughout the siege, their demands would fluctuate, reflecting their uncertainty.
In the meantime, Sergeant Gomez hoped to build a rapport with Loy. He knew it was important to keep the kidnapper calm so that he could extract more information about their plan. Above all, he wanted to ensure that the hostages were safe. And when the timing was right, Gomez asked if Loy would allow the women and children to leave.
Loy quickly consulted with his brothers and their friend Quang, but the decision was unanimous. No one was leaving before their demands were met. And now, 17-year-old Long Nguyen wanted to add another demand.
4 sets of full body armor, like the kind he had seen in his favorite movie, RoboCop.
Sergeant Gomez told Loy that the Sacramento Sheriff's Department didn't have full body armor. In fact, he wasn't even sure if it was a real thing or just something made up by the movies.
When Loy relayed this information back to Long, his younger brother was furious. He yelled at Loy to take better control, and he shouted, loud enough for Sergeant Gomez to hear, that if their demands were not met, they would start shooting people.
Alarmed at what he'd heard, Sergeant Gomez consulted with Sheriff Craig and the other authorities at the scene. After a brief consultation, they agreed to a compromise. Loy could have 1 bulletproof vest in exchange for releasing all the women and children.
Loy replied he was only willing to offer 1 woman and 2 children. He also added an unusual stipulation. The officer delivering the vest had to strip to his underwear, so that Loy and his gang could make sure he didn't have a gun.
Sheriff Craig quickly relayed these demands to his deputies. It was an unusual order to give to anyone, and he hesitated before asking for a volunteer. But Sergeant Bob Lyons quickly stepped forward. He was willing to put his life on the line for the women and children inside the store.
At 2:50 p.m., Lyon stripped down to his underwear and walked across the parking lot, carrying the bulletproof vest. Every TV camera in the parking lot focused on Lyon as he walked up to the front door, laid the vest down, and retreated.
A few seconds later, the front door of Good Guys opened, and a female hostage crept outside to retrieve the vest. A few minutes later, she appeared again, carrying 1 child and holding the hand of another.
Sheriff deputies surrounded her and the children and escorted them to a waiting ambulance for medical checks. It was 1 success, but the mood in the store was already changing for the worse.
Inside, 17-year-old Long examined the bulletproof vest. It was old and didn't look authentic. Certainly not as cool as the movies he so admired. No doubt disappointed and angry, he decided they had been tricked. In the meantime, Sergeant Devlin and his SED team were carefully removing a ceiling panel in the hallway between Good Guys and the fabric store. A fisheye camera was inserted into the narrow crawl space and threaded through the ceiling over Good Guys.
Sergeant Devlin now had a limited view into the rear of the store. In the distance, he could see some of the hostages sitting on the floor, their hands tied with speaker cable, but no gunmen were in sight. He also noticed the large television boxes that the captors had stacked at the back door. When the time came to break in, this would be a tough obstacle, but at least the immediate area was clear of hostages. This gave Devlin hope that their entry could be swift and low risk.
Just then, 19-year-old Pham Nguyen heard a noise from the rear of the store. Sergeant Devlin signaled for his men to be completely silent.
Pham walked to the back door and yelled, "Get away from the door!"
Just then, he noticed a pair of shoes behind the counter in the car stereo department. They belonged to Good Guys employee John Lee Fritz. Pham pulled Fritz out of his hiding place and shoved him at gunpoint to the front of the store.
17-year-old Long tossed the bulletproof vest at Fritz and yelled at him to put it on. He was going to test it by shooting him.
Coming up, Long Nguyen becomes increasingly violent. Now back to the story. It was 3:40 p.m. on Thursday, April 4th, 1991, roughly 2 hours into a tense hostage standoff at the Good Guys Electronics store in Sacramento, California. So far, the four gunmen had released three hostages in exchange for a bulletproof vest. But 37 captives still remained inside.
One of the gunmen, Long Nguyen, had just passed the bulletproof vest to a Good Guys employee, John Lee Fritz. Long didn't believe the vest was real, so he told Fritz to put it on so he could shoot at it and see if it worked.
Luckily, the store's assistant manager, Dave Riss, intervened. He calmly suggested that Long put the vest on the ground and shoot at it instead. The test would still work without putting any lives at risk.
Long's older brother, 21-year-old Loy Nguyen, agreed. He snatched the bulletproof vest from Fritz and placed it on the ground away from the hostages, preparing to shoot at it.
But this only made Long more upset. He complained that it had been his own idea to test the vest, so he should be the one to shoot at it.
Loy stepped back, allowing his younger brother the chance to prove himself.
The bullet bounced off the vest, proving that it was authentic. But Long was still upset. One stupid vest was not enough, especially when they had originally demanded four. Clearly, the cops were not taking them seriously.
Frustrated, Long marched over to the front desk, where Sergeant Gomez was waiting on the phone. Long grabbed the receiver and introduced himself as Number One. He was now in charge, not Loy.
Then Long spun around and pointed his gun at the hostages. He reportedly yelled, "We're going to have to start shooting people because you don't do what we say. Send me some body bags."
By now, the authorities had managed to identify the gunmen and notify their families. The Nguyens arrived on the scene, and their mother, Sao, begged the sheriff to allow her to speak with her three sons.
Sergeant Gomez informed Long Nguyen that his mother was outside the store, but Long replied that he did not want to talk with his mother and slammed the phone down.
Long appeared to be angrier than ever.
Dr. Thomas Strentz, a former FBI crisis negotiator at Quantico, observes that hostage takers often have a story to tell. These tales usually involve a version of the events leading up to the hostage crisis, at which point the captors already think of themselves as the real victims.
For Long Nguyen and the rest of the gunmen, the hostage standoff was the result of years of pent-up rage. They had constantly struggled to adjust to life in America and came to see themselves as the victims of circumstance. This hopelessness seemed to fuel Long as he angrily stalked back to the front of the store. He was determined not to give up until the authorities honored their demands.
It was now 4:27 p.m., 3 hours into the negotiations, but the division between Long Nguyen and his older brother, Loy, was steadily growing wider. The tense hours had illuminated what each of them had actually wanted.
While Loy simply wanted money to return to his homeland in Vietnam, Long's desires were more complex. He too wanted to go to Vietnam, but he also seemed to have desperately wanted to prove that he was the sort of tough guy that he'd seen in the movies, and to hopefully impress Sacramento's Asian street gang, the Oriental Boys.
And while all four of the gunmen were discouraged with how little they had managed to negotiate, Long was clearly more agitated than the rest.
Meanwhile, Sergeant Gomez and the rest of the authorities were becoming more worried. Now, several hours into the hostage crisis, the sheriff's department made the tough call to replace Sergeant Gomez as negotiator. Sergeant Paul Hauptmann from the department's Critical Incident Negotiations Team, CINT, would take his place.
Experts would later question this sudden change, calling it a very risky decision. And while there was no immediate outburst after the switch, some of the hostages would later say that the gunman clearly became more agitated as a result of the switch.
37-year-old hostage Alan Story said, "It just got to a certain point where they realized the negotiator for the police was not bargaining in good faith. They were going to have to convince him that they were serious. They were going to have to start killing people."
But this was precisely why Sergeant Hauptmann had been brought in. And in his first contact with the store, Hauptmann initiated the "talk to me" technique.
Harvard Law School's Program of Negotiation published an article on their website in 2019 titled, "Learn These Crisis Negotiation Techniques from Negotiators in the Trenches," considers the "talk to me" technique to be an essential first step in building rapport with the captors in a hostage situation. Opening up an avenue of communication signals to a hostage taker that you are willing to listen and to bargain.
Sergeant Hauptmann tried to build this rapport with Long, but Long refused to cooperate. He wanted more bulletproof vests, and he insisted that the one they had been given was an antique.
As Long lost his patience, he began to yell at Hauptmann, telling him that he had better listen, or he would kill a hostage and throw their body out the door.
Long also increased their original ransom demand from $3 million to $4 million.
Alarmed but calm, Hauptmann reassured Long that he was going to do whatever he could to help them, but first Long needed to release the women and children.
It was a compelling bargain. For the past few hours, the sobs of the remaining children in the store had grated on Long's nerves. At this point, he was happy to let the children go, but he wasn't so sure about releasing the women.
In the end, Long decided to let the oldest woman, Henrietta Fellion, leave with the three remaining children.
It was a heart-wrenching scene, and one six-year-old child refused to leave without her mother, Terry Banks. But in the end, Terry convinced her daughter to go. She told her she loved her and she would see her soon. At 5:35 p.m., Henrietta Fellion walked out of the store with the three small children at her side.
Sergeant Hauptmann and the CINT negotiations team had a major breakthrough. This was their first successful negotiation without giving anything in exchange, and this wasn't the only progress being made.
15 minutes later, around 5:50 p.m., Sergeant Devlin and his SED team quietly broke through the wall into a rear stockroom of the store. Now Devlin could hear everything being said inside the Good Guys showroom.
Now that the children were gone, 17-year-old Long seemed a bit more calm. He and Loy even decided to let the hostages use the restroom, but when Long announced this, the hostages remained silent. They were all too terrified to be the first to go.
In the end, the pregnant 22-year-old Lisa Joseph raised her hand. During the first hour of the siege, Lisa, her cousin Veronica, and her uncle Fernando had been forced to lie on the floor away from the window. They were grateful that they were at least together and could offer each other emotional support.
But now, Lisa had begun to have terrible stomach cramps, and she desperately needed to urinate. She struggled to her feet, her legs shaking under the weight of her pregnant belly.
Slowly, she walked toward the restrooms at the back of the store, accompanied by 17-year-old gunman Quang Tran.
Quang shoved the barrel of his shotgun into Lisa's back, forcing her through the door of the restroom. Her whole body was shaking as she staggered into an open stall. But when Lisa tried to close the door for privacy, Quang pointed the 12-gauge at her head. He wanted the door left open so he could make sure she didn't try anything funny.
Lisa cried out in pain from her crippling stomach cramps. Again, she tried to close the door, but Quang shouted no.
In his anger, he grabbed Lisa's hair and shoved her against the wall.
Lisa's heart was pounding so loudly she could hear it. She took a deep breath and asked the young man if he had a sister.
This seemed to work. Kwong suddenly let her go and turned around.
Lisa finally closed the door, and in the painful minutes that followed, she tragically went through a miscarriage.
When Lisa returned, several other hostages volunteered to use the restroom, and for a short time, relations seemed to improve with their captors. But by 6 p.m., the mood had soured once more as the Nguyen brothers began to debate amongst themselves.
19-year-old Pham complained he was tired and hungry. He wanted to go home and have Chinese food.
His oldest brother, 21-year-old Loy, was also despondent. He was beginning to doubt their demands would ever be met.
Pham suggested they should give themselves up. After all, they hadn't hurt anyone, and at this point, they might only have to spend a few years in prison.
Loy agreed. He was already wearing the one bulletproof vest that they had received, and he reasoned that they could exchange the rest of the hostages for three more vests. Then, when they gave up, the cops couldn't kill them.
But 17-year-old Long was in disagreement. He made fun of Loy for thinking that the bulletproof vest could stop the cops from killing him. They would just shoot him in the head.
For Long and his best friend Quang Tran, surrendering was not an option. The two 17-year-olds were already facing criminal charges for trying to set their high school on fire. Between that and their current situation, they both faced heavy prison sentences. Besides which, they both still cared about impressing the Oriental boys.
Long argued that they needed to do something even more drastic to prove their strength.
But 21-year-old Loy argued that they had already proven themselves. They had successfully taken over good guys and terrorized a total of 41 hostages. A SWAT team was outside waiting to storm the building, and the news media had made them movie stars.
However, Long still wasn't satisfied. He wanted to show the cops outside that they were as serious as they said they were, that they wouldn't take no for an answer.
And to do that, they needed to shoot someone.
Coming up, police intervene during the brutal last minutes of the crisis. Now back to the story.
It was almost 8:55 p.m. on Thursday, April 4th, 1991. Inside the Good Guys electronics store, the four gunmen were becoming more tired and disillusioned by their failed negotiations.
7 hours had passed since 21-year-old Loy Nguyen, his brothers Pham and Long, and their friend Quang Tran had stormed the store. And while Loy and Pham wanted to surrender, 17-year-olds Long and Quang were still out for blood.
They needed to prove they were worthy of induction into the Oriental Boys. And what better way than to shoot someone?
First, 19-year-old Pham Nguyen and 17-year-old Quang separated 8 of the remaining hostages into 2 groups of 4. Then they tied them together with electrical cords.
Next, 17-year-old Long Nguyen, the most volatile of the 4 gunmen, flipped a coin into the air. Heads, he would shoot someone from the right group. Tails, he would shoot someone from the left.
It came up tails.
Long looked at the 4 hostages on his left. Then he pointed to 24-year-old Sean McIntyre.
Sean was a Good Guys employee, but today had been his day off. He had come into the store on a whim to buy new speakers for his car stereo. Now he was being chosen as the first sacrifice in an already harrowing ordeal.
Long told Sean that he would release him in exchange for shooting his leg. All Sean had to do was take the bullet and appear on national television to bring awareness to the hostage situation.
Sean McIntyre agreed, knowing he hardly had a choice. He tried to control his panic as Long pressed a 9mm pistol against his thigh. Long fired, and Sean fell to the ground, clutching his leg.
Outside, news cameras captured the scene as it unfolded inside the lit windows of the Good Guy store. Everyone gasped as Sean McIntyre fell to the floor.
A police sniper, Jeff Boyes, had a perfect view of the action from his position under the SUV in the parking lot. Concerned for the safety of the other hostages, he radioed his superior, SED Sergeant Devlin, and asked if he had the green light to take out one of the gunmen. But Devlin said no. There were still too many hostages in the line of fire.
Meanwhile, inside the store, some of the hostages were screaming in panic, thinking they were going to be next. Sean was moaning in agony from his wound.
The noise was driving Long crazy. He pressed his gun to Sean's head, ready to execute him on the spot. But 21-year-old Loy pulled his brother away, telling him to calm down. They needed more bulletproof vests, not bodies.
Loy and Pham helped Sean McIntyre to the door. Outside, in the parking lot, Sheriff Craig and the TV news media watched as the front door opened. Sean McIntyre dragged himself outside, bleeding from the fresh wound.
After his wound had been dressed at the hospital, Sean McIntyre appeared on national television as agreed. He had no message from the captors, only a synopsis of their most recent demands.
Sean said, "There are 4 gunmen and Good Guys holding approximately 20 people hostage. They want 3 bulletproof vests, a helicopter, and firearms. That's all I have to say."
In the meantime, shortly after 9 p.m., another hostage was having difficulty breathing. 72-year-old Quinlan Schulte was a regular Good Guys customer who had chosen the wrong day to stop by the store. He was among those who had been lined up against the main window, acting as a human shield between their captors and the police.
But Quinlan was diabetic, and standing for more than 7 hours was taking its toll. He desperately needed to sit down and rest.
Another hostage, 28-year-old Chris Sona, worked up the courage to ask 21-year-old Loy Nguyen if he would allow Quinlan to sit down. Loy responded that he needed time to think.
Then, at 9:15 p.m., Quinlan Schulte collapsed. He had only fainted, but some of the hostages screamed, thinking the elderly man had been shot.
17-year-old Long walked over to Quinlan and looked down at the unconscious man. He said, "Well, it looks like he has just decided who is going to be our next person to be shot."
With that, Long took aim at Quinlan's leg and fired.
Out in the parking lot, Sheriff Craig and the authorities panicked. All they saw was Quinlan lying on the ground. They couldn't be sure what had just happened, and they feared that the gunmen might be executing hostages. As soon as Long picked up the phone receiver, hostage negotiator Sergeant Hauptmann asked about the gunshot.
Long told him that no one was dead, just an old man who had been shot in the leg. He blamed it on Hauptmann, telling him it was his fault for not taking them seriously.
Sergeant Hauptmann was worried about Quinlan. The elderly man needed medical treatment, and Hauptmann offered to exchange the wounded hostage for a second bulletproof vest. But Long Nguyen said to send the vest first, then he would think about releasing the old man.
Hauptmann agreed, and the SED team quickly came up with a plan to use this to their advantage.
Underneath his SUV in the parking lot, sniper Jeff Boyes received a new set of orders. A vest was going to be delivered out of reach of the front door, and Boyes was to take the shot if he had a clear line of sight of any of the captors.
The hope was that a hostage would be sent out to retrieve the vest, and that when they stooped down to pick it up, Boyes would get a clear shot on one of the gunmen inside. It would be tricky, given the row of hostages kneeling in front of the main window, but hopefully a captor would be standing above them.
With this plan in place, SED Sergeant Devlin instructed another deputy to slide the second bulletproof vest across the concrete towards the front door, but not too close. They wanted it to land far enough away that someone would need to come outside to retrieve it. Once this was done, boys waited for the golden opportunity.
Inside the store, 17-year-old Long stared at the bulletproof vest lying just out of reach. He was insulted that the police hadn't followed the same demands he gave last time when a nearly naked deputy had laid a vest near the front door. Furious, he grabbed the nearest female hostage by the hair and pulled her to her feet. It was Veronica Gutierrez, Lisa Joseph's cousin.
Lisa and her uncle Fernando could only watch as Long pressed his gun to Veronica's head and called Sergeant Hauptmann. He yelled at the sergeant for insulting him with this dumb vest trick. Now he was going to kill a hostage and throw her body out the door.
Luckily, his cooler-headed brother Loy told him to calm down and send the woman out to get the vest. Then Long would have his own bulletproof vest, just like a tough guy from the movies.
Long snapped at his brother to shut up. He was in charge now. But Loy was right. Long really wanted the bulletproof vest. So he grabbed a length of a speaker cabling and tied it around Veronica's waist as a tether.
At this point, Veronica was convinced she was going to die. She started to cry, which agitated Long. He put a gun to her father Fernando's head and said, "You tried to escape, and I kill your family."
But threatening her family had the opposite effect. Veronica looked into her father's eyes. He smiled back at her reassuringly and mouthed silently, "Go."
Sergeant Hauptmann had overheard the threat to Veronica. He shouted over the phone, asking if anyone was there and could hear him, but Long had already abandoned the receiver.
In the parking lot, the TV cameras watched as the good guy's front door opened. Veronica Gutierrez took a hesitant step outside, tethered by the speaker cable to Long Nguyen inside.
Beneath the SUV in the parking lot, sniper Jeff Boyes was ready. His finger lightly touched the trigger as he set his scope on Long Nguyen inside. He just needed Veronica to move to her left a few inches.
Right then, Veronica dropped to her knees to retrieve the bulletproof vest. Boyes fired.
But in that moment, the good guy's door swung shut. The bullet shattered the glass front door, missing its target. Long managed to scramble back safely behind a pillar.
After a tense silence, the SED team knew they couldn't risk a retaliation from Long. He had proven himself too volatile. There was no telling what he might do now that he had been shot at. They had to act now.
A sheriff deputy threw a flashbang grenade through the broken glass of the front door. A flashbang, or stun grenade, is a non-lethal explosive device used to temporarily disorientate the senses. It produces a blinding flash of light, which can impair vision and cause temporary deafness and loss of balance.
The grenade exploded inside the store, creating panic and chaos.
Simultaneously, Sergeant Devlin and the SED entry team broke through the barricade rear exit of the store. It took them 2 to 3 seconds to clear the television boxes blocking the door. Then they separated into their teams. Two SED men ran to the west side of the store. They shot 17-year-old Quang Tran before he could react.
Meanwhile, two others ran to the east, while Sergeant Devlin and another SED member ran up the center of the store towards the front. One team member stayed behind in the rear of the store.
Out front, a deputy helped Veronica Gutierrez to her feet. He guided her away from the danger zone, but she was still tethered to Long Nguyen inside the store.
Suddenly, Veronica was pulled to the ground, but it wasn't Long who was responsible. Inside, SED investigator Greg Peterson had unknowingly stepped on the same line of cable attached to Veronica.
Outside, the deputy helping Veronica pulled on the cable. The sudden jerk caused Peterson inside the store to lose his footing. He was yanked off his feet just as a shotgun blasted the space where he had been standing.
His comrades later claimed that in the confusion, they believed he had actually been shot. They immediately opened fire, killing 19-year-old Pham Nguyen.
As the store devolved into chaos, some of the hostages managed to untie themselves and were trying to find the way out, but the smoke was blinding them. Only one person, Good Guys employee Kurt Warburton, managed to escape.
And there were still two gunmen on the loose, 17-year-old Long Nguyen and his older brother, Loy. And as the TV cameras continued to peer into the hazy scene, a horrifying spectacle unfolded.
Long Nguyen ran along the line of kneeling hostages in front of the main door, systematically shooting at them before he disappeared back into the smoke-filled store. He kept firing his weapon, killing hostage Fernando Gutierrez, Veronica's father.
When Sergeant Devlin and his partner reached the front door, there was no sign of their targets. Then suddenly, Long Nguyen appeared out of the smoke in front of them. He was instantly gunned down.
At this point, Sergeant Devlin couldn't tell how many of the hostages had been shot. There was blood everywhere, and while three of the gunmen were dead, one suspect was still missing.
Just then, on the west side of the store, two SED agents came across a young male lying on the floor. He was wearing a bulletproof vest and bleeding from a bullet wound.
The man said he was a hostage and begged them not to shoot him, but the nearby hostages quickly identified him as the last of their captors, 21-year-old Loy Nguyen.
Shortly after 10 p.m., the whole ordeal was over. Sergeant Devlin confirmed that all four suspects were neutralized. Only Loy Nguyen had survived.
None of the SED entry team were wounded, but two more hostages, Good Guys employees John Lee Fritz and Chris Edward Sona, were confirmed dead at the scene. 14 others were taken to the hospital with injuries.
Days after the terrible events at the Good Guys store, the local Vietnamese American community in Sacramento was still trying to understand why these young men threw away their lives in such a desperate way.
The Nguyen brothers' father, Vietnamese immigrant Bim Cat Nguyen, summed up his grief saying, "I wanted them to finish school, become successful, and still keep the Vietnamese traditions. Now there are no words left to say."
When 21-year-old Loy Ca Nguyen appeared at trial, his defense team argued that Loy didn't shoot a single hostage. If anything, he had helped to protect their lives from his younger brother, Long.
Loy stared impassively at the floor as a Vietnamese interpreter translated the verdict. He was convicted of 3 counts of first-degree murder for taking part in the siege and sentenced to 41 consecutive life terms.
His dream of a peaceful future in Vietnam were permanently lost, but he'd achieved the notoriety his brothers had hoped for. Almost 2 decades later, the Sacramento hostage crisis is still one of the largest hostage rescue operations in U.S. history. 3 hostages were killed, 14 more were injured, but 24 were rescued unharmed. If it weren't for the skilled work of the Sacramento Sheriff's Department, countless more lives could have been lost.
Thanks again for tuning in to Hostage. We'll be back next Thursday with a new episode.
You can find more episodes of Hostage and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify.
Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite podcast originals, like Hostage, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker.
To stream Hostage on Spotify, just open the app and type Hostage in the search bar.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. We'll see you next time.
In the meantime, don't take your freedom for granted.
Hostage was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler. Sound design by Brian Golub, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Isabella Way. This episode of Hostage was written by Adam Clement, with writing assistance by Kate Gallagher, and stars Irma Blanco and Carter Roy.